This is Bloomberg Best.
Bloomberg Best is about the insight and the context that we get from our guests.
Top-notch, value-added, hot-off-the-presses news.
Bloomberg puts out thousands of news stories a day, but some really stick with you.
It's a great way to catch up on some of the stories you might have missed on the Bloomberg.
Stories you're not going to find in any other news organization.
Bloomberg Best. Bloomberg's best stories of the day, powered by 2,600 journalists and analysts in more than 120 countries around the world.
I'm June Grosso.
And I'm Ed Baxter on this edition of Bloomberg Best for January 17th, 2017.
We count down the days to the inauguration of Donald Trump with all due respect hosts John Heilman and Mark Halperin.
A lot of what Trump is going to do on immigration is exactly what Barack Obama did. Deport people, which President Obama did. Put more resources on the border, which Barack Obama did.
Sure.
And Trump will, unfairly, get more credit than Barack Obama did for doing it.
Plus, we talk about the economy under Trump with Matt Schlapp, chairman of the American Conservative Union.
A lot of people believe that there's such a stranglehold on the private economy because government is too big and just simply spends too much money. And they're going to have to be sensitive to that or they'll hit some choppy waters.
And we discuss health care with Maryland Democratic Senator Chris Van Hollen.
I think there are a growing number of Republicans who realize that it would be absolutely reckless to destroy the Affordable Care Act without some kind of comparable replacement.
All this and more coming up in the next hour of Bloomberg Best.
All week, we'll be focusing on the inauguration of Donald Trump. John Heilman and Mark Halperin look at some of the president-elect's campaign promises.
I am asking Congress to support the construction of new roads, bridges, airports, tunnels, and railways all across our nation. We're going to do it. And we're going to build it on time, on budget, not for three times what it's supposed to cost.
On the military, we will rebuild our badly depleted military and ensure that our service members have equipment and training, technology and resources, everything they need to get the job done. Now, hopefully, we will never have to use that great power that we're going to build. We are going to build the strongest military that we've ever had. On immigration, we will build a great wall and we will put an end to illegal immigration and stop the drugs from pouring into our country also.
America spends more on education than any country by far, and yet our results are terrible. We spend more per pupil than any nation in the world by far. And you look at Sweden and Denmark and Norway and China and Japan, and they're all at the top. And you look at us, spending much more per pupil, and we're down at the bottom. We're going to change that.
We are going to be putting on our journalistic hip waders and wading into a lot of these issues tonight. But let's begin with Donald Trump's infrastructure proposal. The president-elect continues to tout his plan to scrounge up, going to be a lot more than scrounging, $1 trillion. That's $1 trillion of public and private funding for roads, bridges, airport, and other public infrastructure projects. So, Mark, the big question here, this is a big ticket item. So what are the biggest hurdles that Trump, you think, will face as he tries to pull off this bigly promise?
Well, he's got to do three things, I think, to pull it off. One is to define what kind of projects he wants and convince people in Congress, particularly Republicans, that this won't be boondoggles. Two is he has to decide, as he will on every major thing he does he want Democratic support or not? Does he want to shape it in a way to win some token or big Democratic support? And three is getting it through the pipeline here, a big infrastructure bill, a big tax reform bill, dealing with regulation, dealing with the Affordable Care Act. Those seem to be the big four. And sequencing so that the traffic will bear a major piece of spending like this is going to be tough. All right, let's move on now to immigration. Donald Trump has said his big border wall is going to cost between $8 and $12 billion. Other estimates, though, vary widely. Almost all agree that Trump's number is probably low for such a wall. The president-elect now says he'd like to start building the wall with U.S. funds, but insists that he'll get the Mexican government to reimburse the U.S. for the expenses. All told, when you add up the cost of ending the nation's so-called catch-and-release approach to immigration, to deportations, tripling ICE border security personnel, installing a visa tracking system, all the other Trump proposals on immigration, the likely price tag could exceed $100 billion. It is, of course, unclear exactly what immigration legislation Republicans are ultimately going to settle on. But, John, from what we know, when it comes to getting immigration reform through Congress, What are the biggest hurdles Trump will face?
Well, the biggest hurdles are the fact that his plan is totally ridiculous on a million levels. There's not going to be a border wall. There's not going to be a great wall like the Great Wall of China. And there's not going to be Mexicans are going to be paying for it. None of those things are going to happen. So
there's going to be a physical wall. I'm not saying it'll go all across the border, but Trump.
There's already a fence. There will be a bigger physical wall.
No,
that's not what he's been talking about. He's been talking about building a giant wall on the entire border.
It's going to allow him to go down to the border and stand in front of some and say, here's a wall.
Do that already. I think this is going to be a tricky, tricky issue because I don't know how much Trump actually believes. This is one of these issues where I have no idea if Trump actually believes anything he's ever said about this or whether it was purely political and purely calculating. And, you know, there's a reason why a lot of people have had that Republicans and Democrats have had a hard time passing immigration reform. It's on some level a super easy issue. And then it turns out
happens
it's a super
once, happens once
complicated
in
issue.
On most of these issues, things are so murky. I'm not willing to predict. I'm willing to predict on this one. A lot of what Trump is going to do on immigration is exactly what Barack Obama did. Deport people, which President Obama did. Put more resources on the border, which Barack Obama did.
Sure.
And Trump will unfairly get more credit than Barack Obama did for doing it. He will do photo ops with pieces of wall, and he will kick the can down the road until he gets see if he can get Democratic support on other issues and then try to pass comprehensive immigration reform with Democratic votes.
I will tell you, we must not. You can say, well, he'll get credit for it. This is such a signature issue for him that it is incumbent upon us all to not just let him stand in front of a pile
100%.
Of bricks and say, hey, I built a wall.
A lot of Americans want better border security.
Yeah, but sure they do.
And Barack Obama did not.
A lot of Americans want comprehensive immigration reform.
They do. And Barack Obama did not get nearly enough credit for doing the thing that I think is most important, which is not letting employers get away with it.
Up next, we continue our special coverage of the inauguration with John Heilman and Mark Halperin, looking at what President-elect Trump may trim in the budget.
You can see all the Bloomberg Best stories at Best Go. This is Bloomberg.
We're continuing our special coverage of the inauguration of Donald Trump. Here's John Heilman and Mark Halperin.
And now we're going to turn to the places that are most likely for the next president to trim federal government expenditures. Here to help us do that is Bloomberg BNA congressional correspondent Nancy Ognanovich, Bloomberg Radio anchor Kathleen Hayes, and Kelsey Snell, a congressional reporter for The Washington Post. So I want to just do a round robin, same question to all three of you, and let's start with Nancy. Low-hanging fruit. If Donald Trump wants to be serious about the debt and the deficit, what's the easiest set of things he can just go out and say, okay, we're going to cut these things right now, then we'll get a quick agreement and be able to get that done?
Well, it's not easy, but he might look at entitlements because that's where the real money is. But they're always looking at the discretionary budget and the appropriations and trying to find cuts there, but that's not where all of the money is. It's just harder to cut benefits, as you know.
Kathleen, what do you think?
Well, you know, I think that this is a very interesting question because there is no low-hanging fruit. Donald Trump wants to rebuild the military. Donald Trump wants to rebuild the Veterans Health Administration. That's going to cost money. That alone adds $1 billion. He's cutting taxes. The tax cut's going to be, from $4 to $6 billion. So, or am I getting my B's and T's mixed up? It's going to be a lot of money. But what they're talking about is cutting non-defense discretionary spending. That includes things, though, like childcare, housing assistance, the national parks. And to do that, he's proposed taking a penny plan, cut a penny from every dollar you spend every year. By 2026, that would have non-defense appropriations about 29% below current levels. So it adds up. Is that going to get through Congress? How are the American people going to feel about that? He says we'll feel better because the tax cuts and the spending boost will create jobs, boost the economy, and it will make up for it. But this, to me, is where they're going to go, and you just have to wonder how easily they can get that done.
All right, so far, no low-hanging fruit in sight. Kelsey, you got anything for me that might just be an easy win for Donald Trump here?
Well, you know, the first thing they say they want to do is they want to repeal Obamacare. And in theory, depending upon the way you do that, that could save some money. But it would be more than offset by the $8 to $10 billion they want to spend on building a wall, about $7.2 trillion that independent organizations estimate would be lost through the tax reform plan Trump has talked about. And, you know, he's talking about a tax credit for infrastructure spending that could be another $140 billion. So low-hanging fruit's kind of hard to find right now.
Nancy, one of the more interesting picks to me that Donald Trump has made at head the Office of Budget at the White House, Mick Mulvaney, former congressman or current congressman from South Carolina. He is a deficit hawk. What are people thinking that his role will be in massaging and shepherding through the first Trump budget?
Well, that's huge, picking Mick Mulvaney. He's like a founder of the House Freedom Caucus, and right there, that sent a signal that the deficit hawks, the people who have been creating so many problems for Boehner and Ryan, are really going to have a lot more say about the discretionary spending budget. I mean, to put him in charge of the Office of Management and Budget really says a lot. And so I think that even though the president doesn't have to submit a budget for this year, his fingerprints are going to be all over everything. And he's going to be a big negotiator this spring when they have to reconcile those spending bills that they didn't get done last fall and they held over until the spring. That could be a real battle with Democrats, and he'll be right at the, you know, at the forefront of that.
Kelsey, my theory is that Trump has chosen certain people, Mike Pence and Mulvaney first and foremost, as symbolic picks to kind of appease people on the right on certain issues, including deficit hawks, but that he's basically going to use that personnel as a smokescreen to maybe not go for a lot of deficit reduction in the beginning and allow Mulvaney to say to people on the Hill, trust me, long term we'll get to it, but give us this year to try to deal with other priorities. What do you think of that theory?
Well, you know, I don't think you're entirely far off on that one. You know, I will say, though, that Mulvaney is very comfortable saying no. That is kind of one of the hallmarks of what the House Freedom Caucus has done so well, is to say no. They haven't been a legislating group of people. And in that regard, he's probably quite comfortable saying no both to his colleagues and to Trump. You could see a year ahead where they're so mired in the process of repealing and replacing the Affordable Care Act and talking about tax reform that people are comfortable saying, you know, we'll work on that deficit reduction a little bit later. Or they could point to tax reform and say, you know, this is how we're going to reduce deficits. This is how we're going to make up money, is through growth.
That was Bloomberg BNA congressional correspondent Nancy Ognanovich, Bloomberg Radio's Kathleen Hayes, and Washington Post congressional reporter Kelsey Snell.
Up next, John and Mark speak with Matt Schlapp, chairman of the American Conservative Union.
You can see all the Bloomberg Best stories at Best Go. This is Bloomberg.
This is a Bloomberg Quick Take. Context and background on issues of interest.
Our focus is on free trade and its foes, winners and losers, with Bloomberg's Angela Cullen.
The situation.
We're living in a world in which global trade is slowing, trade spats are escalating, and digitalization and automation are upending traditional industries and challenging incumbents in unimaginable ways. Free trade has become a lightning rod for voter discontent with globalization that is feeding a wave of protectionism and being blamed for job losses and the decline of manufacturing towns.
The background.
Donald Trump won the U.S. election with a campaign that tapped into that voter discontent, promising to slap punitive tariffs on China, renegotiate NAFTA, and pull the plug on TPP, one of two major trade deals the Obama administration had intended to reposition the U.S.'s trade relationship with the Asia-Pacific region and with Europe.
The argument.
Arguments for free trade center around the fact that trade has raised global living standards and enabled many poor countries to narrow the gap with the rich ones. Consumers have gained access to a broader range of goods, and in wealthy nations, cheap imports drove down the cost of basic items such as clothing.
For more on free trade or other quick takes, go to BloombergView.com/quicktake, or for terminal customers, go to NIQuick. I'm Charlie Pellett, Bloomberg Radio.
You're listening to Bloomberg Best on Bloomberg Radio.
I'm June Grosso.
And I'm Ed Baxter.
We're focusing in on the inauguration of Donald Trump. John Heilman and Mark Halperin speak with Matt Schlapp, chairman of the American Conservative Union.
What is the thing on domestic policy, on the domestic policy agenda, that you think is going to move first? In other words, infrastructure, tax reform, Affordable Care Act repeal. What is the first thing you think Donald Trump will sign into law of those three, if any, in 2017?
You know, I think in their minds, they'd probably like it to be infrastructure. Infrastructure is the most clear cut, but I think it's going to be Obamacare repeal and replace. In fact, as you know, they've already started this with the budget resolution process. And I actually think the replace piece, which I continue to read about the fact that it is true that Republicans haven't got some unanimity in what it is, but they know what the range is, and I don't think it's that complicated. The question is, can they be so aggressive and still get 8 Democrats, which is a perfectly valid concern because they're going to need them.
So if you think about tax reform, just go through the politics of that for me, right? I get that there's a lot of companies across the country have wanted to see corporate tax reform for a really long time. Right now, the Trump tax plan is really severely weighted towards benefiting the wealthy and not the kind of voter who we think of as the Trump base. So how do you square that circle and make tax reform happen in a way that is not seen as a giveaway to the rich and therefore do the things that Trump wants to get done politically with that kind of legislation?
You know, John, I don't know if I'm going to exactly be able to answer that, but I know what the biggest problem is. Let's take Republicans first. Their biggest problem with tax reform is everyone knows Republicans want to cut taxes, right? That's no shocker. But they have this issue where individuals and S-corps pay a very, very high rate. It's all in. It's with the Obamacare taxes, it's 48% or so. It's really high. And then you have the corporate tax rate at 35%. And some corporations actually pay an effective rate of 35%. And so most people in D.C. are focused on getting that corporate rate down. But why would you lower the corporate rate for the biggest companies in the country yet leave the small business tax rate so high? So for Republicans, they want to take down both of those rates so that it's about the same.
Well, how do you think the debt and deficit question is going to play out among green eye shade Republicans on the Hill on one hand and Donald Trump and others who, again, pay lip service to it, but don't ever really want to make the hard choices involved?
Yeah, no, I think it's a fair statement to say that Donald Trump didn't exactly run on a constrained federal government.
Yeah.
By the same token, he did raise the idea that, you know, when you're $20 trillion in debt, you just can't continue to do everything. And I think he's a lot more sensitive to that than maybe was in his campaign and political rhetoric. And I think, look, the whole Tea Party movement in the Republican Party was so much about spending and a government that is too big and does too much. And I think that the President-elect Trump and Vice President-elect Pence and the team, they understand at the end of the day a lot of what this political coalition that put them into office. And yes, it's about our sovereignty and it's about getting the economy going again. But a lot of people believe that there's such a stranglehold on the private economy because government is too big and just simply spends too much money.
So let's go back to tax reform. But, you know, the reason it happens less than once in a generation is you got special interests who rise up. You're a homeowner. Right. You give charitable deductions. You deduct your state right. and local taxes in the Schlapp household. How is it going to be that Donald Trump and Paul Ryan and Mitch McConnell are going to stop special interests from killing tax reform?
Yeah, it's a great question, and you're exactly right, Mark. It's why it doesn't happen. And the reason why I think it actually is going to happen is because there's the biggest motivation this time is that the U.S. corporate tax rate is out of sync with our major competitors. We have one of the highest rates on the globe, and that's without even putting in state tax rates as well. So we're not competitive. You all have seen the headlines. You see so many American companies that go to Europe or go to other parts of the world to headquarter so that they can pay a lower rate of income tax on their corporation. And because of that, which is much different from 1986, this is motivating probably to more Democrats now who say, look, we can't keep losing these corporations. And I think that's why the Democrats are at the table on the corporate tax rate.
That was Matt Schlapp, chairman of the American Conservative Union, speaking with Mark Halperin and John Heilman from Bloomberg Politics.
And coming up, we look at the future of healthcare with Maryland Democratic Senator Chris Van Hollen.
You can see all the Bloomberg Best Stories at Best Go. This is Bloomberg.
With the Bloomberg Business of Sports Report, I'm Michael Barr. On the heels of soccer's international governing body moving to expand the World Cup, regional officials are considering creating a new $1 billion regional tournament. CONCACAF, which oversees soccer in North and Central America and the Caribbean, is thinking about holding its national competition every 4 years instead of holding the national team competition every 2 years. The first tournament could take place in 2020. Former Massachusetts Attorney General Martha Coakley is telling a commission that Boston-based daily fantasy sports site DraftKings has added more than 100 jobs in the state. Coakley is an advisor to the company. It looks like the Chargers aren't the only NFL team in California that's moving. According to sources cited by NFL Network's Ian Rappaport, the Raiders will file relocation papers to move from Oakland to Las Vegas. And that is a Bloomberg Business of Sports report. I'm Michael Barr.
It's 48 minutes past the hour, and now it's time for Bloomberg View.
I'm Jonathan Bernstein, a columnist for Bloomberg View. No, Democrats should not look for their own celebrity to run for president in 2020. To begin with, Donald Trump may be a celebrity, but it sure hasn't made him very popular. If anything, Trump did somewhat worse than fundamentals-based projections suggested, given the state of the economy. But the main reason Democrats should ignore calls to nominate a Hollywood icon or pop star is that healthy parties care about more than just winning the next election. They care about governing. They care about implementing the party's policy agenda. And they care about doing a good job administering the nuts and bolts business of the nation. That means the best plan for political parties is to run someone who would be constrained by the party and who would actually be good at the job. Celebrities fail both tests. Republicans may soon find out what happens to a party ill-equipped to govern, just as they did the last time they won unified control over government. It's not a model Democrats would be wise to emulate. I'm Jonathan Bernstein. For more View, please go to BloombergView.com or View Go on the Bloomberg Terminal.
Thank you, Jonathan. And now we're going to continue our inauguration coverage with Mark Halperin and John Heilman from Bloomberg Politics. They spoke with Maryland Democratic Senator Chris Van Hollen about Donald Trump's plans for the national debt.
Donald Trump says that he is going to eliminate the national debt, all $19 trillion of it, within 8 years by vigorously eliminating waste, fraud, and abuse in the federal government, ending redundant government programs, and growing the economy to increase tax revenues. How plausible is that promise?
Not very. That sounds like Trump math, which doesn't add up. He said a lot of things during the campaign that didn't add up, and this is one of them. He's made a lot of promises to the American people, but I think you'd get bipartisan agreement, at least from those of us who've worked on budget issues, that that just doesn't work.
Senator, tell us about the Van Hollen plan for deficit reduction. What would you cut, or what taxes would you raise, and how much would it reduce the deficit?
Well, the plan that I put forward in the past, including the House Democratic budget that we had last time the House marked up a budget, really had a mix of things. It had a revenue that was raised, similar to many provisions in the president's plan, closing a lot of special interest tax breaks. It also would have put in place some reforms in the Medicare system to build on the efforts in the Affordable Care Act that move us in a direction of paying for value, not volume. It also would have allowed the government to negotiate drug prices, prescription drug prices under Medicare, which has substantial savings. So there were a number of provisions that combined would reduce our deficit over a period of time.
Okay, so by how much over what period of time? I just want to sort of set a baseline here. All the things you listed, I know that wasn't all your plan, but those things plus other things would have reduced, in your view, would reduce the deficit by how much over what period of time?
Well, let's put it this way. The deficit grew by less than 3% a year, and at the end of the 10-year period, the debt would be lower than it is today as a matter of, as a percentage of GDP, which is around today between 70% and 80% of GDP.
Senator, we talked a little bit earlier on this program about Donald Trump's infrastructure proposal or plan or maybe dream, $1 trillion over 10 years. That's a kind of plan that under normal circumstances, a lot of Democrats might want to get behind. Under a Democratic president, they might love. When you hear that, is your attitude, this is kind of a question that will come up again and again on things that Trump proposes, do you think to yourself, if it's good on the merits, I'm going to support it? Or do you think back to 8 years ago and want to take a more McConnell-like approach, which is sort of like, you know what, make Republicans pass this on their own, we're not going to help them?
No, look, I think we've been clear. I've been clear that where we can find common ground, and this idea of modernizing our infrastructure is the one that's gotten the most attention. We will work with the administration. Now, clearly, they're off in a very different direction right from the start. We haven't seen anything about this plan. I've put forward plans to help modernize our infrastructure that were at least in part paid for by closing some of the international tax breaks. But we haven't seen the Trump plan, and I don't think anybody knows what's in it. But the idea of us working together to modernize our national infrastructure, look, in the area I represent, in the state of Maryland, we've got a lot of big infrastructure needs, roads, bridges, transitways. I would extend that to things like broadband in our rural areas and the clean energy grid. So, look, there's a lot of work we can do together. The devil is always in the details. There's been a lot of talk about Trump trying to deal with all of this through the tax side and tax incentives. I don't think that will work. And so let's just wait and see what he proposes.
If he called you up and had a real, tried to have a real conversation with you and said, Senator, I want your support for tax reform. You know where I stand. You know the realities of Paul Ryan and Mitch McConnell are in charge on the Hill, but I want your vote. Where do you see the possibility on tax reform that he could win your vote, given, again, the constraints he's under and what he's proposed and what Paul Ryan has proposed?
Well, first I should say it would be good if the president-elect would interact that way with folks on the Hill. So far, it's been primarily via tweet and at least with respect
I got to say, just to be clarify, Joe Manchin, yeah. Your colleague, says he's talked more to Donald Trump than he talked to Barack Obama in 8 years. So he is talking to some people in your party.
I think you know that they courted Senator Manchin to be the head of one of the cabinet agencies. Yeah. So obviously they had conversations about that. But look, when it comes to tax reform, I actually think President Obama put forward a pretty good plan. It didn't get a lot of attention because it landed in a Republican House controlled by Republicans on both sides. But I'm happy to have a conversation on tax reform.
What are some specific elements? What are some specific elements that you think could get the votes through Mitch McConnell's controlled Senate? Just individual things that you say.
Sure.
Say, President, Mr. President, include this, and you might get my vote.
Well, look, when it comes to, for example, international corporate tax reform, many of us on both sides of the aisle have been trying to find a smart way to get the trillions of dollars that are parked overseas right now back to the United States, but do it in a way that doesn't create a future incentive for corporations to continue to park money until they get another break. And so I have proposed and supported the idea of a hybrid change to that, which is a mix between a territorial system and a worldwide system. You would have some worldwide minimum tax level for U.S. profits overseas, but it would be a lower rate, of course, than the current worldwide rate of 35%, although obviously that's subject to deduction. So that's an area where there's been a lot of discussion in the past, but there's also been a lot of disagreement as to where to draw that line as to what would be a minimal worldwide tax rate. Those are the kind of things where the devil's in the details, but there's been some agreement on the overall approach.
Senator, real quick, we got less than 30 seconds here, but I just got to ask you, given the rapidly shifting terrain on the question of the Affordable Care Act, in the end, do we end up with either Obamacare surviving or with something that's very much like Obamacare just rebranded? Or do you think the law remains in fundamental jeopardy?
Well, I think there are a growing number of Republicans who realize that it would be absolutely reckless to destroy the Affordable Care Act without some kind of comparable replacement. So we've always said we're happy to work with Republicans to fix some of the issues in the Affordable Care Act, some of the issues that have created higher premiums in some of the exchanges. But we're not going to let them blow it up and then say we're going to work with them to try and put the pieces together, because you can't do that. There are only two real ways to deal with comprehensive health care reform. One has been Medicare for All. Democrats have proposed that in the past. The other was what you all know was a Republican Heritage Foundation plan that became Romney Care in Massachusetts that says everyone has to take personal responsibility for their health care. That's why everybody's got to be in the pool. That conservative idea was a mandate at the time. And then you have to have subsidies, premium tax credits for people who can't afford it all on their own. Those are the essential elements of what is Obamacare. So at the end of the day, there are really only two models here. And that's why Republicans in the last 6 years haven't been able to come up with their own plan that meets the same needs, because it would end up looking very much like Obamacare.
That was Maryland Democratic Senator Chris Van Hollen speaking with Mark Halperin and John Heilman from Bloomberg Politics on a special inauguration edition of With All Due Respect.
That's all for this edition of Bloomberg Best.
If you have a Bloomberg terminal, you can see all the Bloomberg Best stories at Best Go.
Our show is produced by David Sutcherman, Richard Truman, and Reginald Bazile.
I'm Ed Baxter.
And I'm June Grosso. This is Bloomberg.
This year, firefighters will battle thousands of wildfires around the country in hopes of containing them. But a single ember that escapes can travel more than 1 mile, where it can ignite and destroy your home or community. You can't control where the ember will land, only what happens when it does. Prepare, protect, prevail. Get fire adapted. Learn simple steps you could take now to reduce wildfire damage later at fireadapted.org. A public service message brought to you by the U.S. Forest Service and the Ad Council. Learn more at fireadapted.org.